Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know
with sports' biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell.
Rick is, I think, just a great guy at handling these situations. I have all the respect in the world for him as a coach, how to manage the roster and knew what all of his guys were capable of doing and or not doing and put them in a position to succeed.
The fastest hour in radio.
Big names, big sports talk.
The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
It has been another busy week in the NBA. Big storyline that stunned many of us, especially Laker fans, was the hiring of Mike D'Antoni and the decision by Jerry Buss not bringing back Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson, of course, was the overwhelming favorite to return, so it certainly has been a wild week for the Lakers. And our inside source that is helping us out this weekend to provide some perspective is the senior NBA reporter with USA Today and Hoops World, Bill Ingram. Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Elissa?
Always great. It's always fun to be right here on the Big E Sports Show, and we want to provide some perspective on the state of the Lakers because there's been a lot of reaction and discussion with this decision. We wanted you to weigh in on it. What's your pulse?
Well, I think when you are the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, if you lose two games in a row, the end of the world has arrived, and you may as well pack your bags because that's just how intense it is with the Lakers. It's unfortunate because Mike Brown is a very good coach. Obviously, he took the Cleveland Cavaliers to the NBA Finals and lost to the Spurs when LeBron was still there. And they were one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference with what I would say is a lesser roster than what the – certainly not as good starting lineup as the Lakers. But, you know, when the losses start to come and you lose all your preseason games and you start the season as poorly as the Lakers did, heads are going to roll, and that starts with Mike Brown. So – I think the shocking thing there, when I heard Phil Jackson was actually willing to coach, which previously he talked about wanting to be a front office guy, a GM, not so much the beating that is the sideline coach anymore, I figured it was his job. But, you know, Mike D'Antoni snuck in there, and I think, you know, I've read all the stuff and listened to all the inside stuff and heard all the explanations. I think what it comes down to is this. It's not about unreasonable demands from Phil Jackson or blah, blah, blah. It's about simplify. This is what Jim Buss had to say. This is what Mitch Kupchak had to say when they were discussing the firing of Mike Brown. His offense was very complicated. He's brought in the Princeton offense with Eddie Jordan, trying to implement a new offense with the Lakers. And you know, some of those guys, like Meta World Peace and Dwight Howard, they're not rocket scientists. They weren't getting it. So when you talk about simplify, it doesn't get much simpler than Mike D'Antoni's 7 seconds or less offense, especially when you have the point guard he designed the system for on the roster in Steve Nash. So I think their hope is, and we've already seen, even with Bernie Bickerstaff running it, that they're going to be a little more up-tempo and score a little more easily, I think, without the restrictions of the offense Mike Brown had in place. I think it might have worked long-term if it had more than 7 or 8 games to implement it, and if Steve Nash had been healthy, and if they had a bench, which they don't. But that is what it is. When you're the Lakers and you lose, you're going to get fired. That's just how it's going to be.
Well, the Lakers show it must go on. They've got to get behind their new head coach. Steve Nash has been very vocal. He is very excited. But, you know, as you step back and you just kind of look at this, you go, how do you pass on bringing back a Hall of Fame coach like Phil Jackson?
Well, that's it, and I think the reason is just that, because with Phil Jackson, you're getting Tex Winter, you're getting the triangle offense, and if Dwight can't figure out where to be in the Princeton offense, which is pretty simple, I mean, Rick Adelman's used it very successfully for years and years and years with lesser players, with Chris Webber and with Yao Ming and, you know, you Kevin Duckworth, you go down the list, but if that team can't figure that out, then the triangle is a great deal more complicated. I myself don't exactly understand. I mean, it's been explained to me. I've watched it many, many times, and it's a very confusing offense. So I think that's it. I think it has everything to do with simplifying it and just trying to let that team get out and do showtime and run and let Steve Nash control where everything goes. And, you know, and if Steve can get healthy, we're going to see how that works.
Bill Ingram is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, he's the senior NBA reporter with USA Today and Hoops World. And, you know, I just mentioned talking about Phil Jackson. What do you think his state of mind was? I mean, do you really think that he was ready to fully commit and to come back and come out of retirement? I mean, you talked about the front office position, but, man, it's a major undertaking being a head coach, and he knows that.
It really is. I mean, the thing with Phil Jackson, he's not going to do anything halfway. I don't think he's a guy who would undertake a job and, you know, if he wasn't really prepared to do it 100%. And that's just, you know, he's one of the greatest coaches to coach the game. I think the one thing with Phil that I always kind of put an asterisk after him, as opposed to some guys like Rudy Tomjanovich or Adelman or, you know, some of his contemporaries, Phil has been great at picking teams because he had Michael Jordan for 6 championships, and then he retired when Jordan retired. And when the Nets asked him if he would become their head coach, no, I'm finished coaching. That's all. I'm moving on to other things in my life. And then when the Lakers call with Kobe and Shaq on the roster, all of a sudden he's out of retirement. So, you know, he has had the best player in the NBA on all of his championship teams. And I think that has to be mentioned when we talk about how great is Phil Jackson. Now, does that mean he's not a great coach? No. You still have to coach. You still have to – there's still a chess game to be played. But a lot of times the chess game for Phil was, oh, let's see, the team we're playing is within 6 now. Michael, are you done with your break? Okay, get back in. Okay, it's back to 15 now. Or Kobe, I need you to check back in. Thanks. All right, can I get a hot dog? So there's something to be – I think you have to mention that. Phil's a great coach. And certainly from the standpoint of getting players to get along and mesh together, that's a real skill. But I think Rick Adelman's a great example. That guy wins games. He won a game here in Dallas this week with no one.
It's true.
Entire roster sitting in street clothes, or not even with the team. And they beat the Mavericks on their home floor. I mean, and they're off to a great start.
Well, we are going to talk about the Dallas Mavericks here in just a moment. Just a couple more quick questions talking about this whole Lakers thing as it continues to unfold. You know, Magic Johnson, I mean, he did give kudos to Mike Brown, said he's a great coach, but he didn't feel like with the players that were in place that he was the right head coach for this Lakers position. And he's been very clear about his displeasure with the Lakers not hiring Phil Jackson. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I don't know how many people listening, and I assume you have heard Magic Johnson in his role as NBA analyst.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say it's a good thing he's a Hall of Fame basketball player, because an analyst he is not.
easy,
I mean,
Bill.
Everybody has an opinion. Hey, Charles Barkley has an opinion, but I'm not going to let Charles Barkley or Magic Johnson make crucial decisions about the future of my franchise.
You know, we were talking about Mike D'Antoni and just offensively, you know, the simplicity of it and running an efficient offense. But what about defensively? I mean, what's the expectations and what do you think he'll do on the defensive end of the floor with these guys?
Well, the one thing you have to say about D'Antoni, and I think the same thing, he's not a defensive coach, doesn't emphasize it, but he's never had a lineup where he could, honestly, because his lineup has been guys like Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire and Steve Nash, and these are not defenders. These guys, I'm sure they probably understand the concept of defense, but none of them are willing to commit to it. Steve Nash is not a quick guy. He's not an agile, quick, Chris Paul-type defensive player. But Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony, very capable if they chose to. They just don't. But with the Lakers, you have Dwight Howard, who is all about blocking shots and defense. You have Pau Gasol, that's a pretty incredible and long, tall front line. You have Meta World Peace, who is still, at this stage of his career, a very good defender. Kobe Bryant is one of the best defenders, if not the best perimeter defender in the league. So you have some pieces there that are going to make that team a good defensive team, simply because you have guys who are going to play defense, who are willing, able, and understand. Certainly Kobe understands that you do not compete for a championship without playing elite defense.
Well, elite defense is something that head coach Rick Carlisle is always preaching. It is synonymous anytime that he has been the head coach. And right now, Dallas, they did snap a 3-game losing streak with a win over the Wizards on Wednesday night. I was there at the game. I certainly was impressed, especially in that second quarter when they racked up 40 points. I think they were making around 68% of their shots, 63 points at halftime. I got some question marks still on the defensive end of the floor. What's been your impression so far? They've kind of been up and down.
Well, it has been. I mean, their defensive catalyst is Sean Marion, and of course he's been out with an injury for the last few games, so that hurts. And, you know, they've got a lot of guys. This is a new team almost from the ground up, very few guys back from last year, and Dirk has not been healthy, obviously. We're still waiting for him to recover from the knee procedure. So there's a lot of guys. Kamen wasn't in the lineup to start the season. He's now working his way into that starting role, and there are a lot of things still unsettled. I think the positive is that so many teams are unsettled in the Western Conference right now, that some of these early losses that could be devastating come April aren't quite as tough to stomach right now, simply because the Lakers are struggling, the Thunder have dropped a couple of games. I mean, Memphis looks great, but San Antonio is great, but beyond those two, you've got a lot of teams that are kind of still getting a feel for all their new personnel, all the changes, and so the Mavs are kind of in that group. So if they can get Sean Marion back and then get Dirk back and get that starting rotation settled and let everybody figure out their roles and their switches and all those things, I think it'll start to come together. It's just when you have that many changes, there's a lot of communication on defense. It's all about knowing where you're supposed to be and instinctively knowing what your teammates are going to do in certain situations. They don't have that yet, but they'll get it.
Yes, and you know, we always celebrate anytime they do pick up a win, but realistically, I mean, this is a team that probably should be, 7-2 right now? They, you know, gave that one away against Charlotte, and you were talking about the game against Minnesota earlier in the week, but you really see some lapses as far as with their level of intensity. I mean, we know this in the game of basketball. I mean, you got to play hard for a full 48 minutes, and the fact that Washington outscored Dallas 34-22 and hit those six threes late in the fourth, that's going to kill you every time, and you're talking about a team that hadn't even picked up a win this year.
Yeah, and a team that's missing an all-star caliber point guard in John Wall and a great front court player in Nene. I mean, two of their starters were out, and you know, same for the Mavs. But the rest of the team is much better on paper than the rest of the Mavs. What's left, what's healthy with Dallas is still better than what's healthy with the Washington Wizards. So, and certainly the Timberwolves, who brought like volunteers from the first 10 fans who walked in the door to wear uniforms because they had nobody healthy. So. I just think that's something that's definitely, you know, look, Darren Collison, perfect example. When he's on his game, he is incredible.
He
had two double-doubles right off the bat. He only had three all of last season. But Darren's not on he's not 100% 48 minutes. You know, that's what he's working on. And I think every player O.J. Mayo brings it every second. That was a huge pickup for Dallas. And Sean Marion brings it every second, and Dirk. But there are a lot of guys that are still needing to get into the Rick Carlisle mentality and understand, hey, the expectation here is much higher than anything you faced in your career. And to meet that expectation, you're having to work through some changes to your workout, to your preparation, to your game day stuff. And, you know, again, I think they'll get it. I know there's very much a willingness from guys like Darren Collison, newcomers to the team that are getting into that flow, but they're not there yet.
Well, I was really happy to see Chris Kaman get the start the other night, of course. You know, a veteran guy on the court, and you really need the Mavs. They need to get off to, like they were early on, you know, getting off to a fast start, not just offensively, but on the defensive end of the floor.
Well, and you're talking about the best offensive player the Mavericks have had since Roy Tarpley. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, this guy can score from all over the court. He's big, he's strong, he takes up space, he gets rebounds, he's a good defender, he's a great offensive player. If the Mavs can just get everybody healthy, they look just fantastic on paper. I mean, it still has to come together. But the way Kaman and Dirk, they might be the best front line in the NBA if they're both healthy. Because the number of ways they can hurt you, because they both can take the ball out on the floor, they can both put it on the floor a little bit, those guys can do so much that defenses are going to have to collapse on them, one or the other or both. And that's where Darren Collison, O.J. Mayo, Vince Carter, and all these guys that are great three-point shooters, they're going to be open. It's going to open up the offense a lot more. And that's where they've been struggling because guys have been defended. You know, the offense has stalled at times, like in the fourth quarter against Washington, simply because, and Charlotte, I mean, the overtime, they were terrible. That's where you would have Dirk in there making an amazing play at the right time, drawing defense away so that O.J. Mayo can... I mean, they were swarming O.J. Mayo. It was all he could do to get free. So those are some things that will kind of work out.
And there's no way that they lose that game against Charlotte if they have Sean.
No, or Dirk.
I right.
mean, they just don't, because one of those guys makes it happen. You know, that's the thing I don't think people understand. The Mavs have had basically an extended preseason because their schedule has been ridiculously easy, or should have been. They've played lottery team after lottery team. So they've looked pretty good because they've been playing a low level of teams in the NBA. But, you know, as the talent starts to increase, it's going to get hairy until Dirk gets back.
Do you have an update on Dirk? I mean, what is the latest? I mean, how is he progressing and coming along?
I mean, the thing with Dirk is you don't know, because if they said 6 weeks, I assume that means four, because Dirk is the hardest working player in the Western in the NBA. I'd say he and Kobe are probably the two hardest working guys. You know, Avery Johnson used to joke that a day off for Dirk, man, he only worked out twice. Because he's just that determined. Uh-huh. He hates to miss games. It's like having his fingernails pulled out. I mean, he just detests missing games. So I'd be surprised if it's longer than 4 weeks. But even at that, we're still a week and a half, 2 weeks away, minimum.
Bill Engram with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're getting ready to close out our interview. We're going a little bit long, but tell us, I want to say congratulations. I guess you've got a new book that's going to be coming out in the month of December, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with you, first of all, reading your book, but also having a long-form interview and conversation to talk about it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I do have a book coming out. It's called Life is a Mindset, and it's kind of in a response to people who ask me, how did you start Hoops World? How did you get to be, you know, now we're part of USA Today. We're one of the largest networks covering the NBA. Well, now with USA Today, we are the largest network covering the NBA. So how did that come about? And basically, we talk about in the book the Reed philosophy, which is if you are relentless, enthusiastic, ambitious, and disciplined, you can accomplish anything. It's a lesson. I start the book with the statement that the older I get, the smarter my parents get. And that's really what it's about, because my dad has always told me to believe in myself and take risks and just be relentless and enthusiastic, ambitious and disciplined, follow your dreams.
Love that.
But make the sacrifice. Don't let anything stand in your way. When you set your sights on a goal, on a dream, pursue it relentlessly. Do not let anything stand in your way. And that lesson has served me so well. I took him a couple years ago down to the midcourt on the Mavs logo, and I said, I want you to stand right here. Nobody gets to stand here. This is a very rare thing to have access to stand in the middle of an NBA court. I said, I'm standing here because of you. Because you taught me to chase my dreams. And that's what the book is about. It's about really how those four principles, the Reed philosophy, relentless, enthusiastic, ambitious, and disciplined, how those things enabled the Hoops World story to progress to where we are now. And also tying in examples from other people like J.K. Rowling and Ray Kroc and Kobe Bryant and Clint Eastwood. Famous people that are iconic, Oprah Winfrey, who started from nothing and utilized these four principles to become the icons that they are.
Well, it's very positive, very upbeat. Like I said, I'm looking forward to reading it, but I bet there's some good lessons in there about discipline too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Discipline, that's where you talk about a couple of times. That's where I bring in Kobe Bryant, talk about how he was missing, you know, he shot 30% in a game that the Lakers lost in Miami. He scored 26 points, but didn't have a good night from the field. And so 90 minutes after the game, he's got Miami ball boys in Miami's arena, 90 minutes after the game, taking jump shots because he didn't shoot well that game. And he's getting booed by the Heat fans that are like, hey, why should he get to use our arena, blah, blah, blah. And Kobe said very simply, when something's broken, you have to fix it immediately. And this is where I am. This is when it happens. It's what I got to do.
The title of the book is Life is a Mindset. I know you've got a website that's up for it. Quickly give us that.
Yeah, the website is backinthegame247.com, which is the motivational speaking type stuff, the program that goes along with the book. The website for the book will be live when the book comes out. But for now, you go to backinthegame247.com and find us there.
Wonderful. Congratulations, Bill. I look forward to seeing you at the next Mavs game. Of course, we've been talking to Bill Engram, the senior NBA reporter with USA Today and Hoops World. Bill, we'll talk to you here real soon, okay?
Thanks so much, Elizabeth.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead. Jason Peter, we're getting ready to talk some college football. Stay close. Around here, a person is honor-bound by their word, and the way to earn a person's trust is through action. Action that reflects character, honesty, principle, and a commitment to community. We're Pinnacle Bank, and we're dedicated to serving unique banking needs and working hard to deposit back into our communities. Not because we have to, but because it's the right thing to do. Upright and loyal, that's the Texas way. And at Pinnacle Bank, we think that's the way banking should be. Visit us online at PINNBANKTX.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter. Under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Our next segment is being powered by our friends at Mercer Well Service. They always do a great job. You can find out more information about them on our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And it is always a true pleasure when we can welcome in with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, Jason Peter. Jason P., how are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, doing great. And my goodness, the Cornhuskers, they have won four straight games. I'm sure you're feeling pretty darn good up there, right?
Well, I think most people feel better about this team if they go into the half down by at least 10 or 14, because it seems like they've found a little something. When they're down, they just find that mojo and just rally back. I think people, obviously you look at the quarterback, and Taylor Martinez has got to be the most scrutinized player that I've seen since I've been back, since 2007, and even when I played, obviously there wasn't a lot of scrutiny back then, but it's hard for this guy to get through a day without him being the topic of talk radio. There's some newspaper article at least once a day. But he's been the guy who rallies this offense in the second half. Now, you can praise him all you want in the second half, but he's part of the reason why they get down, two touchdowns or more going into the half, because he's just careless with the football. It was 2 weeks ago where he had four touchdowns or three touchdown passes, and he also had three fumbles. And, you just can't do that. And, when you look at a game like they have this weekend against Minnesota, this should be a done deal. Minnesota should not even have a football game here against Nebraska, just in terms of competition. I mean, you're talking about a school like Nebraska, who's one of the top five winningest programs in college football, against Minnesota, which I don't know the last time they've had success. But if you turn the ball over, then you give them the opportunity to be in the football game. It was just a few years ago that Nebraska had seven or eight turnovers against Iowa State here in Lincoln at Memorial Stadium, and Iowa State walked out of here with like a 9-7 win. You just cannot turn the ball over this day and age, especially with how potent some of these offenses are. So I think if they're able to take care of the football, then it's an easy win, but if not, they could be in for a nail biter like they were against Penn State.
Have they played a turnover free game this year, Jason?
No, I don't think so. I would have to go back and look, but I don't think so. And it was the same thing, against Penn State. I think they for some reason they start off kind of slow, or they're not just clicking on all cylinders, which I understand. But the defense also gives up points early on as well. But then, when you finally start to get some momentum going, and boom, the ball's on the ground, or he's throwing a pick. And, Nebraska was fortunate again in this Penn State game where there was another big, big controversial call that ended up going Nebraska's way. You look back a few weeks at the Michigan State game, there was the horrible pass interference call against Michigan State in the end zone, under a minute to play, where Nebraska at that point was trying to move the ball down so that they could get in field goal range to try to tie it up. And then after that pass interference call, it put them now in touchdown range and an opportunity to win the football game, which they did with just a few seconds left on the clock. But then against Penn State, there was a play where I think it was a tight end. He kind of made one of these last-ditch efforts to get the ball across the goal line plane. And sure enough, the ball comes flying out, and Nebraska covers. And it was a huge, huge momentum change. And, they went back, and they reviewed it, and it, to me, from the television copy, it looked like the ball had at least crossed, you know, the white line. And I don't know if they felt like there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it, because they ruled it a fumble on the field. So I know you need a lot of evidence to overturn it. But to me and to everybody else watching, it looked like it did cross the plane. I guess they ruled that the ball was coming out before maybe he got it across. But whatever the case, they needed that call. And look, Nebraska fans for a while now have felt like every call has gone against them. Well, this year, there's they can't make that argument, because there's been about three or four games where there have been crucial, crucial calls that have gone Nebraska's way.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We're going to shift avenues a little bit here. Let's talk some Big 12 football. Of course, a big matchup on hand between Oklahoma and West Virginia. And my goodness, you know, I believe, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought that West Virginia was a top five. They were at least in the top 10, you know, early in the season. And they got off to such a fantastic start. They were 5-0. But now it's just been disastrous. I mean, they have lost four games in a row. What do you think is going to happen when they step out on the field with Oklahoma?
Well, who knows? I mean, you know, certainly you play some non-conference games early in the year that, you know, you're not playing the Alabamas, or, you know, which they had a tough weekend as well this past weekend. But I think sometimes you don't really know how a team is going to be until they get in the conference and they're playing decent competition from week to week. And you know, this was an argument that people made when Nebraska first went into the Big Ten, and that's that you're playing all new opponents. So, you know, it's maybe a little bit more difficult for a team to kind of run the table. And I don't know if I buy into that. I mean, as a player, I never looked at the year prior as having anything to do with the game that I was playing this year against that same team. You know, some people are saying West Virginia, now that they've got into, you know, conference play and having to play all new teams, that, you know, finally catching up with them. I don't know. I just think that they have one guy on offense that's really, really good in Geno Smith. And when you're able to apply pressure and you're able to rattle him a little bit, like most other quarterbacks, they're not going to be as good. You know, when you have people in a quarterback's face, they just don't throw the ball as well. And I think you got to credit some of the teams that they've played with, some of the game plans that they've come up with. But yeah, I mean, at one point, I remember Dari Noka from ESPN had picked them to win the national championship.
And wow.
For the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, it looked like maybe he knew something that we all didn't.
And he's a Sooner.
Then it just kind of, you know, they hit the wall, and now it's just a matter of trying to grind out some more wins. But, yeah, it will be interesting. I mean, here you have two high-profile quarterbacks in Landry and Geno Smith, and two high-powered offenses. It will probably end up being which defense shows up to play. That will be the team that wins.
Well, West Virginia has been a team that has struggled all season long. And, you know, Dana Holgorsen, he has just got to be so frustrated. Here we are. We're in college football week 12. We're providing some predictions. Oklahoma at West Virginia. How do you think it will all shake itself out? I mean, you're thinking that it's going to come down on the defensive end?
Yeah, and I would side with Oklahoma with that. I think Oklahoma has the guns on defense. It's just a matter of, is it going to be clicking on that particular day? West Virginia is not as talented as Oklahoma. They don't have as many good players as Oklahoma. And I know Oklahoma, they've let me down a couple times this year when I thought for sure they were going to rise to the occasion. But again, I'm going to go back to that same well, and I'm going with Oklahoma again.
How about the big win with Texas A&M over Alabama last week?
Amazing.
That is.
I mean, it really is.
Hey, we had R.C. Slocum on our show. You know, he was very excited and optimistic about what this team was going to be able to do in the SEC, but I don't think we saw that coming.
No, and I mean, at the beginning of the year, knowing what Texas A&M had done in the previous years, you just, you didn't have that much confidence in them. And then they had a new coach coming in, Kevin Sumlin, where you didn't know would this type of offense work against a Big 12 schedule. And you know, it certainly has. I mean, obviously with Johnny Manziel, this kid, what can he do? And, you know, it's just, I'd love to see a guy like that have success, because here was a kid, he was a three-star kid coming out of high school. And I'm not a big recruiting guy. I think it's comical. I think you have guys that haven't even played the game that are handing out some of these grades as to who's going to be a four-star or a five-star. I mean, which guys are going to go on and be first-round draft picks in the NFL. Please, you never know how a kid is going to develop in his time, and especially now with the pressure that's on these kids. If they don't succeed in a year or two, if they're a five-star guy, everybody's writing them off, and everybody's telling them what a bum he is. You know how detrimental that can be to a young kid who's just maybe a sophomore in high school, or in college. Some kids don't really develop until their last year or 2 years.
Right.
But if they have this big mental block in their head where they're thinking, gosh, everybody thinks I'm a bum because I haven't been an All-American since my freshman year, you know, it's a shame, because kids just don't sometimes get to develop at the rate that they need to develop at. You know, because part of it is a mental aspect too, and you know, there's so much pressure, and so these kids are such under the microscope. But you know, back to A&M, and here we were just a couple of weeks ago, where Steve Spurrier is talking about how they could probably play with some teams on Sunday, right? Without
that's Alabama. Right. We had that conversation. Yes,
he knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh my!
He knows that these kids, they hear every word that's said about them out there. And if you don't have that shell built around your locker room, stuff like that, and I'm not saying that's the reason why they lost. I think Texas A&M had a good game plan. They had some really good players that made big plays in big games. And they ended up being a better team that day.
I was providing some great analysis. Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Go to his website at jasonpeter.com, and you can join us online at eradiosports.com. Jason, thanks so much. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, as we're going to have next week off. And I will talk to you here. Gosh, we're going to be coming into December before you know it.
I know. I can't believe it's almost over. So we're already getting down there. So thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.